Spent a lot of time on the Mets trade of two excellent relief pitchers that have now reshaped the back end of the pen. The Yankees haven't done much yet. Fixed the offense, or at least filled some holes, and made the team more complete. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But they haven't done anything with the pitching. And that's where the real impact had to be made and still has to be made. And Brian Cashman still does have 15 hours to do so. But for me, I saw a report that for Mason Miller, and right now that would be my target if I'm the New York Yankees. I know the last caller talked about his ERA, and yes, he's pitching to a 3.7 ERA this year. But again, for the we have seen this before. It's for the lousy A's who play in a minor league ballpark. We have seen Luis Severino be awful. I'm curious to see. I'll check during the break his home road splits for Mason Miller. But the dude throws 103, 104 miles an hour. Like this, he is one of the premier relievers in the game. He has control. He's young. Like, this is the guy to go get. And I saw the report that they are prioritizing starting pitching, young starting pitching. And for me, the Yankees have no reason not to move it. Like, here's the thing about the Yankees and their pitching prospects. And whatever they are, like Cam Schlittler or whatever they have in their minor league system. And there are some names, and they've traded a lot of it over the years. But you look at this road. Look, they have Cole, who is still under contract for how many years, and they still have money invested in him. And he's going to start, is my point. You're not subverting him from the starting rotation once he comes back. You've got money in now Max Fried for the next 7 years after this one. Carlos Rodon is still under contract and making a ton of money. And they have Luis Gil, like, right there. And they also have coming back. And you saw yesterday or 2 days ago, the Yankees on the broadcast talk about how Clark Schmidt had that the different kind of sleeve Tommy John, and he's expected to be back, you know, mid-season next year. They're hopeful that he could pitch in August and September of next year. So you have him too. Like, you've already got kind of a rotation filled out. There's not a lot of room for the Cam Schlittlers of the world. There's not a lot of room, you know, for these guys to make their way to the major league level. I would trade as much starting pitching prospects as I can. Like, the rotation is kind of set. Now, sure, you have injuries. You always want to have guys in the farm system. But if anyone's looking for starting pitching, the Yankees need to be willing to move whatever they can, and that includes Cam Schlittler. I would definitely move him for a controllable piece to the bullpen, like a Mason Miller. I'd be willing to move any pitching prospect the Yankees have. Any. And again, as not just me, but Jeff Passan, Ken Rosenthal, Andy Martino, John Heyman, they're all telling you that the Yankees farm system is far better than it's being reported. You don't have to believe that. You don't have to like that. Go open your baseball perspective and tell me, hey, they're the fifth worst. Okay, that's fine. Maybe they are, maybe they're not. The perception around Major League Baseball from the guys who talk to executives are telling you it's better than perception. And that other teams covet it and covet their prospects more than we are being led to believe. To me, the rotation is almost set for the future. Like that, you don't need, like, go get a starting pitcher. Great. I'm open to go getting a starting pitcher to help this team. Go get a relievers. Go get a Mason Miller. Go get someone of substance here, as opposed to trading low-level prospects for just arms that are better than what they have. That might help the team. And like I said before, that might help them win the World Series for all I know. They might get a reliever that we all poo-poo and go, the guy's okay. And he might have the best 3 months of his life dominating the postseason and help the Yankees win, for all we know. But I want to go out there and make impact moves. And Brian Cashman has it at his disposal to go do so. Now, the one guy I wouldn't trade, and I said this off this game, maybe we'll get to the game here, I'm not trading Trent Grisham. I know that they're probably not going to keep him. I know that he's going to get a decent contract off of this year. They've already got Judge in the outfield. They're going to bring back Bellinger, I would think. Dominguez, or I don't expect both Dominguez or Spencer Jones to be traded. So one of them has a really good chance to be in the outfield next year. I don't know if Trent Grisham's going to be back with this team. If I had to make a guess, he won't be. But damn it, if the guy isn't having an incredible season with clutch home run after clutch home run, as last night as the Yankees are losing 1-0 in the eighth inning, doing absolutely nothing offensively, that home run helped, along with a million other things in this game, change the dynamic of that game. And Trent Grisham right now, for a team that can't get out of their way with defensive mistakes, plays a great defensive center field. He is clutch. He is killing right-handed pitching. Like, I know that there is value there, and I understand in this market there's value there in a seller's market. And I understand that they've got a surplus of outfielders and that they're not going to commit to him after this year. But if it's about winning this season, it is very difficult for me to make a case that the Yankees are better off with an outfield that doesn't include the gold glove caliber center field play and clutch hitting from Trent Grisham. He's having one of those seasons. He may never have another one like this ever again. I can't trade Trent Grisham. He's too important to this team. He's too good right now. I'm looking to win. All the trades are under the guise of trying to win this season. That's the trades I'm looking to make to help this team. It's very difficult for me to make the case right now, depending on what they get. Now, listen, if they trade it for something crazy, if Trent Grisham helps them get Mason Miller, okay, I don't think it would. But, like, I'm not going to just trade him for an upgrade in the bullpen. Like, if I trade him for the best reliever with control like a Mason Miller, or I move him for someone great, okay. But I'm not trading Trent Grisham. Look what this dude does. Look what this dude does all year. He's been doing this. That's a massive home run. As last night's game was absolutely crazy. If you didn't see this game, this was a wild game. I was in the press box having a real tough time being in the press box. I'll tell you that right now. I was sitting next to Brandon Cuddy of The Athletic. That dude did not, I'm sure he wasn't thrilled. I'm going to have to call him up. Maybe I'll get him on a Saturday show because I'm sure he's not going to come on at 4 o'clock in the morning. But he could not have been happy sitting next to me. Back and forth in my chair. I'm rubbing my knees. I'm banging the table. I'm tearing up little pieces of napkin into balls. Like, it was nerve-wracking at the stadium last night. And yes, there are tons of mistakes, and we have to get to Anthony Volpe, because Anthony Volpe right now is a conundrum that, I'll be honest with you, I don't know the answer to. And I know it's easy to scream, send Anthony Volpe down. He needs a break. He needs a mental break. Anthony Volpe stinks right now. You got to send him down. You're killing him. You're doing it. You're killing yourself. You're killing him. I see Sal's tweet. You look like idiots. Did they look like idiots when he's hitting a game-tying home run in the bottom of the ninth inning when he's got 6 home runs since the All-Star break? His offense is picked up, and the defense, you could tell me all you want. Do you think, like, honestly, when you have the yips, do you think a week in the minor leagues is going to fix it? Like, I know they sent down Alvarez to get his swing going. And if Anthony Volpe wasn't hitting anymore and was still the same player he was 2 weeks ago, where his offense was trash, I think you have a better case. But you look at him now, a team without Aaron Judge, the dude is having a good run offensively. And if this thing started with his offense to being taken out onto the field, hopefully it'll start to change. He's in his own head. I get it. I get it, and we watched another error last night on a routine ground ball that he had to come in on. Like, yeah, did he have to come in on it? Yeah. Did he have to rush it a little bit? Yeah. Could Ben Rice have made the scoop? Yeah. But you can't be throwing the balls into the dirt every single play. I think we all agree Anthony Volpe has a problem right now. He's got the yips. Like, I still think the best way to get through it is to play through it. Now, that's for him. For the New York Yankees, is that sustainable? How long do you allow a shortstop who can't make the routine plays? I get it. But I don't think it's an easy answer. I don't think it's as simple as, like, oh my God, you're killing him. Like, give him a day off. Give him 2 days off. You think 2 days off is going to, like, while he sits and thinks about how he can't make a play for 2 days? What's he going to do in those 2 days that make him feel better or change this? Like, it's the yips. I don't know if 2 days is going to help. Like, yeah, send him down for 2 weeks. Let him go play in AAA and make some easy ground balls and feel better about himself and then come up. Great. Okay. Maybe that will help. Maybe it won't. I don't know. But right now, offensively, he just helped win them the game. The other night, he got a base hit to give them the lead. Then he had a 442-foot home run. Anthony Volpe is driving the baseball and having much better at-bats. It's a problem, his defense. I'm not trying to tell you otherwise. It's a major problem, and it can't last. I agree. But right now, I still think, I don't know of another way to do it than to play through it for now. Like, the idea that Rosario has to be the starting shortstop tomorrow, otherwise the Yankees are idiots. Really? Really? I don't know. I don't know what's best. I'll be totally honest with you. I don't know. But last night, another error that thankfully did not hurt them all that much. And he actually, in the biggest play of the game for him defensively, late in the game, he made a good throw. But it's been too many mistakes, 16 errors now to go along with his 16 home runs. And it's just on a daily basis. He makes a error on this, throwing the ball into the dirt. Now, again, to be fair, the ball, the last two, one was in Goldschmidt's glove, and that was in Rice's glove. Like, can someone please just pick him up once? How many times do we credit Pete Alonso for making scoops? How great has he been this year? We talk about how great he is around the bag, how many scoops he's made. Think of how many errors he saved his infield. Like, you need someone to pick the kid up. But right now it's a problem. I just don't know what the best solution is. If you think you know, you could tell me. Call me up at 888-808-1019. But I know he hit a game-tying home run off of a very good reliever, and otherwise the Yankees don't win the game. His error did not cost them. Others have, clearly, and the next one very well may, obviously. But offensively, he's helped them win the last two games. I don't think you can argue it. That's a huge home run. They're about to lose a heartbreaker as they score two runs in the eighth to take a 2-1 lead. Devin Williams comes in to close the game in the ninth, gives up a walk and a two-run bomb down the line to Lowe to blow the save. And here's the other thing about Devin Williams. Now, look, I can't tell you I'm uber confident when Devin Williams comes into the game, but he's been far better. And even in this outing, the swing and miss on the changeup is back. Like, when he was really struggling at the start of the year, he wasn't getting the swing and miss on the changeups. He had no fastball command. They were sitting on the changeups, and it was getting pounded consistently. The swing and miss on the changeups is back. He has been far better. I believe I saw something on Twitter the other day that one of his changeups was deemed the nastiest pitch of the entire season from any pitcher in baseball. It had the best movement, and it had the best, you know, whatever they deem it to be. It was the nastiest pitch thrown the entire season. He's been better, and amazingly enough, he blew 2 4-run leads, which technically isn't a save situation. Last night was only the second save he has blown. So while I can't tell you I'm overly confident when Devin Williams steps onto the mound, I'm also not going to go absolutely crazy and say he can't be the closer. Because he's been much better over the last month, but he comes in a game they have to have. Leading into the deadline, in the division, you know, trying to stay afloat at the top of the American League wild card, as well as keep pace with the Jays and keep it close. 3 games in the loss column out of first place, and the Jays won earlier in the day. That was an enormous game last night. For an offense that got completely shut down, they scored 2 runs and rally. For 2 runs in the eighth, with a Grisham home run, Bellinger, who's just been incredibly good. And I'm going to get to Bellinger in a little bit and clarify some of the comments that Met fans are all furious with that I made yesterday. But Bellinger with another base hit, Stanton, who hit a rocket in the gap earlier in the game and had it smothered and caught by a tremendous play from the left fielder of the Rays. He comes through with a muscle base hit. They take a 2-1 lead. Devin Williams blows it. They go, and Volpe hits the home run in the bottom of the ninth. They give up a run in the top. You get an incredible play from Jason Dominguez. Now, would a, up against the wall, would a better left fielder just be standing there and make the catch? Maybe, but he is not that. And that was a great catch to save three more runs. It's only one. Bellinger comes through with the triple in the bottom of the 10th. The Yankees are unable to get him in. Tim Hill, who was supposed to not even be in this game, comes in and gets through the 11th, and the Yankees walk it off with McMahon after a balk from, I mean, just everything. And then you get to the sloppiness of what happened with Austin Wells. Now, this is where I'm going to get in trouble with the Yankee fans. I understand this, and I do understand that everything that happens with the team is under the purview of the manager. I get it. Now, no one wants to give him credit for the Bellinger triple, I'm sure. Nobody wants to give him credit for the offensive resilience that they have shown over the last 3 weeks. I'm sure nobody wants to put that in the camp of under the purview of the manager. And let me just, neither do I necessarily. But if we're going to blame him for all the negative, I just want to admit, so we all have all of our cards on the table. The positives have nothing to do with Aaron Boone, but the negatives are obviously all about him. So now that so we all understand each other. Before we get into this conversation, the resiliency of the offense coming back and winning this game, you know, never say die attitude that this team has kind of established over the last 3 weeks, nothing to do with the manager. Nothing. Let's just make sure we're clear. The negative stuff, all about him. The positive things, he has nothing to do with. Okay, now that we can start there. I do understand that everything that happens on the field is under the purview of the manager. And this team has been a sloppy group. There is no doubt about it. Earlier in the season in the Red Sox series, Jason Dominguez forgot how many strikes there were, and he thought it was a strike three on strike two and wandered off second base. Unacceptable. Unacceptable. But what happened last night with Wells is hard to fathom. In a game like this, for Austin Wells to not recognize or know how many outs there are, and that the play at first is only the second out of the game. And I'm telling you, as I'm there at the game, I had no idea what was going on. I see the bunt from Grisham, which, by the way, I don't believe, and I didn't hear all the postgame because then I was traveling back. I don't believe it was a sacrifice bunt. I think it was a bunt for a hit because he recognized the third baseman was kind of off the line and playing back. He was hoping a bunt for a base hit. But You have to know how many outs there are in that situation. So we see the thing. I see the bunt. I see the play out at first base. I'm kind of, you know, I'm doing the book. So I'm writing the book while I'm watching the replay on the television that they give you in the press box. So I'm watching the replay. I'm putting it in the book. And then all of a sudden, he's in the middle of the infield getting tagged out. And I'm like, what the hell just happened? And then to see him immediately go for his elbow stuff, like he thought it was the third out, that is unacceptable. And if Rice, who is now the backup catcher that they sent down Ascara, if Rice wasn't already out of the game, I would have been all over Aaron Boone for not pulling his ass out of the game. That is a moment you do not come back out for the top of the 11th. Sorry, that's it. And I would bench him today. Wells would not play today. If I were the manager. Now, we know Boone might not necessarily do that. We know he handles things. They won the game, so it's probably a little bit less of a topic. But my goodness, that can't happen. But here's what I like, and I'm not trying to defend Aaron Boone, but like, do players have no personal responsibility? Are we really going to say the manager has to hold him by the hand and tell him how many outs there are? Like, really? That's where we're at? That in the biggest games of the season, in extra innings, that the manager has to go out there, tap him on the shoulder and say, now remember, there's only one out. And Boone said in the press conference that the first base coach told him how many outs there were. You can't make them listen. There's got to be personal responsibility. And you could call all you want about the idea, oh, there's no accountability, that everyone's just, you know, they're allowed to do this, so they do it. Bull crap! The idea, did anybody on the 90s teams need to be told how many outs there were? Is that how they always knew? Because Joe Torre held them accountable? That's how Derek Jeter never made that mistake? That's how Jorge Posada never made that mistake? Because they had their coaches holding their hands? Or because they wouldn't allow that kind of mistake? Because inherently, as a professional ball player, they wouldn't allow themselves to make that kind of mistake. Again, Aaron Boone, it's all under his purview. I get it. And if this team doesn't win, he should be fired. You can't not win and be this sloppy. Obviously. And I hope that, because you're talking about a player who didn't recognize how many outs there were. You're talking about a shortstop who's got the yips and can't throw to first base. Now, we could argue that Boone should pull him, but I don't think the errors are on Aaron Boone. I don't think it's accountability. I don't think it's an accountability issue with the shortstop. And honestly, I'm sorry. I don't think it's anything other than Wells having his head up as you know what. I don't think you can prevent that. The first base coach, unless they're lying to us, which I'm sure many of you think they are, went over how many outs there are. It's the biggest games of the year. He should know how many outs there are. Like, we want to talk about accountability, but we never want to hold the players accountable in our minds. We just want to hold the manager accountable. We never want to hold the players. Like, Wells has to know that. And I hope that Wells, and I hope that everybody else on this team, everybody who is making these mistakes, I hope they know that the manager they love, they are costing him his job. I hope they know that all of these blunders could quite possibly cost the man his job. And if I were Brian Cashman, I would tell them as much. If I were Hal Steinbrenner, I would tell them as much. I'd say, look, losing is losing, can't always win, but you can't lose looking like this, I got to fire him. So you better get your ass together. So, like, to me, we can complain about Boone. I get it. It's happened too much. I get it. But the day that, if I were on that base path, the day I forget how many outs there are, and you want to tell me it's on somebody else because they don't hold me accountable, like, right, like, I heard Keith say, you know, it comes down to management, right? You look at this stuff and it's management, whether you're running a restaurant or whatever. I mean, that's fine. I don't disagree. Some of the, you know, poor management leads to poor working conditions. That's fine. It's on me to know what time it is. It's on me to get here on time. It's on me to break on time. It's on me to do, like, it's on me. It's on me. What happened with Wells is on him. Now, I would bench his ass. I totally agree with that. And he had no choice. He couldn't pull him. He didn't have another catcher to go into the game. But I am sick and tired, and I know that you guys all disagree with me, but I am sick and tired of the simplest mistakes that every player should inertly be able to handle being thrown at the feet of Aaron Boone. It's obnoxious. It's obnoxious. Now, to me, despite that, despite the throwing error from Volpe, despite the closer blowing the game, it doesn't feel as good a victory as it should. But bet your ass, I'm taking the more positives out of that game last night. The Yankees offense, much maligned right now, a Yankees offense that is without its captain and we don't know what kind of offense it is, was being shut down and then awoke at the biggest moments and continued to battle and never said die, never went away, kept coming back. Bellinger has been incredible for this team. He has two enormous hits, the game-tying hit, the game-tying triple, the base hit earlier in the game. He comes through. McMahon has been great for this team. He gets the big hit. They kept fighting. The resiliency of this team has hit a new level over the last month. That's just a fact. And as long, and I think that resiliency carries that game, carries the day more so than the mistakes. And I also think it should point to the general manager of saying, hey, look, I got a group here that wants to fight and wants to win. Yeah, there are mistakes. Yes, they're a flawed roster. Yeah, it's not perfect. But you know what? This team continues to battle. And that's what I'm looking for. Go out there and give this team a chance and bring in some freaking relievers. That game was crazy. That game had some things that make you want to pull your hair out, as the manager said in the postgame. That game had a lot of things that still are the issues for this team. But you know what? They freaking won. And they kept coming back. And that's what I'm going to take from that game. And we'll see what Anthony Volpe is defensively. And I'm not saying pulling him isn't the right thing to do. I just don't think it's the obvious. He's having a great offensive go of it right now. That's an enormous home run. We can dismiss it and say the error is more important. It's fine. I don't disagree, because that's been more consistent than the homers, but he had a game-tying home run off of their closer in the bottom of the ninth inning off a game that we would have been heartbroken if they lost. It's a big home run. It's a big win. 888-808-1019. Quick break. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. We'll continue to take your calls. We'll come right back after a short break. Take you all the way to 6 o'clock in the morning show right here on The Fan. I heard Evan today, just absolute nonsense. I love the dude. I really do. I love Evan. I do. But he's just, sometimes, he's just so gullible and stupid sometimes. It's just amazing to me. Like, he honestly tried to say today, like, I know that the internet is a strange place and they're trying to trick you at every turn. And I've fallen for stuff. But Happy Gilmore 2 just comes out. Just came out. We have heard about Happy Gilmore 2 for a year. They have been promoting this movie for forever. He came out today or yesterday on the show and talked about how, oh, I'm excited to hear about the new, he's coming out with another remake. He's doing another one. He's doing another sequel. I was like, oh, that's cool. I'm listening. He's like, yeah, they're making The Wedding Singer 2. And I'm like, that's cool. Like, maybe he's going to get, he's like, yeah, it comes out in September. I'm like, excuse me? I'm listening. He's like, yeah, it says it's coming out in September 25. I'm so pumped about it. I'm like, Evan, do you think that we've all sat here, all of us, Happy Gilmore 2 is like the biggest movie out there right now. I don't know how successful, you know what I mean? Everyone's talking about it. We're all talking about it. Happy Gilmore 2, it's been promoted. Like, we've been talking about this. He's been doing media all over. Not once has anyone said anything about Wedding Singer 2. And you saw today online somewhere that they're coming out with The Wedding Singer 2 next month? Like, are you an idiot? Like, how could you possibly believe that? How could you? I was in my car driving to the Yankee game, and I was literally just like, I cannot believe he's this gullible, that he's talking about it. He's going on and on about The Wedding Singer 2, and I'm like, oh, cool, cool. And then he goes, yeah, it's coming out in September. I'm like, what? September's next month. None of us have heard anything about this. They just suddenly popped up and said, oh, we've already filmed it. By September, that means they're already done. It's in the can. Like, they're editing the thing now. Like, oh, my God, I can't believe it.
I mean, could you imagine a major production like that just dropping out of nowhere?
No, this isn't like an Eminem album where he tries to just drop it out of nowhere. Like, this is, we would have heard about this. Wedding Singer 2 out in September. I'm like, do you know September is like, today's the last day of July? There's no way they're dropping a major motion picture like that without promoting it and it's going to come out a month and a half. I'm like, Ev, wake up, man. Wake up. Love the dude, but sometimes, I swear.
Well, we know what Evan's going to be doing on Labor Day. Searching for Wedding Singer 2.
Well, I think they all came to the conclusion that he's an idiot. Thankfully, by the end of it, he had a little bit of self-awareness and said, yeah, okay, maybe that doesn't make any sense.
He was fighting it?
Yeah, no, because he came out and just said, it's going to be awesome, I'm looking forward to it, it's coming out in September, and like, all of them didn't immediately go. Like, as soon as he said out in September, I'm like, you idiot. You fell for some fan, thing that they put out on Facebook or something. Like, I see those things all the time. Like, that's obviously not real. And he said, I made sure I did the research to find out that it's real. And I'm like, what? He's like, AI says it right here. He gave the synopsis of the movie and everything. AI, you know, they have a wedding company called Two Hearts. And, you know, something happens. There's a scandal and the company's in financial ruin and they have to pull off one massive wedding to get it all back. Like, he read the whole plot. And then he was like, I got it from AI. I'm like, you got the plot from AI? What are you talking about?
AI literally just wrote you a fake plot to
a
movie.
Yes. Like, it's just unbelievable. I love Evan, but my goodness.
I mean, Evan's a guy who also knows how to use AI. So imagine the people that don't know how to use AI.
No. Evan's the kind of guy who sits around at night talking to AI Abraham Lincoln and asking him questions. That was like a thing we did back with Carton and Roberts. He talked about that. There was like an app that like would answer questions as historical figures. And you could answer them questions, and apparently they would give you, you know, as good a possible answer as they could because they have all the information about the person. Like, it was crazy. But
what do you think the first question he asked Abe Lincoln was?
I know what it was, and I'm not going to tell you. But, no, I don't know. Did it hurt? I don't know. What is he going to ask him?
Hey, now.
But, like, I don't know. Amazing. But 888, I got off traffic. Topic. I don't know why I was talking about that for a second. 888-808-1019. So, yeah, to me, a couple things. One, I don't think I'm sending Anthony Volpe down. And I'm okay with giving him a day off here or there. But I think he's got to just play through it. And the offensive game is starting to step up. And he's too good to just continue to, like, again, he's not a great shortstop. I'm not saying he's the best shortstop. I'm not even saying he's like a gold glove shortstop, even though he's won it. But he's capable of making routine throws. Right now, he's got to fix it. And these games are too important to have it. I get it. But that's a huge home run. His offense has been better. I don't think it's just as easy to say, send him down, get him out of here, bench him, give him a week off, play Rosario. Like, I just don't know if we're at that point just yet. I want to see him battle through this. Because as the offense picks up and he has moments like that where the crowd is cheering him and he has his moment, maybe he could snap out of this defensive funk. And he's been good offensively now. This is the entire second, since the All-Star break, he's been good. Now, maybe recognize that and giving him a day off. Maybe get days off, help the kid. I'm full board on that, but just the idea of jettison him, or how is he still playing shortstop, move him to the minors, I'm just not ready. I don't know if that's the right answer. I don't, and I wouldn't do that yet. And I also don't think I would trade Trent Grisham. Too good, having too good a season. Now, I went to check his postseason numbers. His overall postseason numbers are bad, but I remember him killing the Mets in 22 and killing the Dodgers in 22. He did have two great series that postseason run for the Padres. He had an OPS of 1.9. He almost had an OPS of 2 against the Mets in the wild card round, and then he had an OPS of 9.38. against the Dodgers in the NLDS. Trent Grisham's been great. I don't want to move Trent Grisham. 888-808-1019. Let's go to Steve in Rockland. What's up, Steve?
Well, Chris, I'll tell you that Grisham destroyed the Mets in that series.
Absolutely he did, but, yeah.
But 14 of his home runs are either game tying or put the Yankees ahead. Do you know who knows that? Brian Cashman.
Yeah. No, I mean, Grisham's been really good.
We know it. Wait, it doesn't make a difference if we know it or whoever knows it. Cash knows, okay? He knows. So if you're going to trade a guy who has that type of value at this point, you better be getting something back that's golden. You better be getting back a young guy with at least 2 years of control or whatever it is. Okay, you can't just trade. And this is what I love about, you know, the trade deadline. Oh yeah, the people calling Seth Lugo. Seth Lugo, do you know who had to know that he was getting ready to sign an extension? Cashman. Please, these guys all play golf together or whatever you want to say, all right? You know, Jose Ramirez, not only did he take a hometown discount to stay in Cleveland, but you can be sure he has a full-blown no-trade clause, all right, in order to sign that contract. I mean, the things that were being proposed by some of the people who call the station, which is like,
well, of course,
the pie in the sky. Well,
the fan wants the impossible. But here's the thing: he does, like, he's got to make moves, and today's the day. He's got 14 hours to get two bullpen arms and possibly a starter. Like that, that does have to happen, though, Steve.
And I have to say, you know who did a nice job was Stearns.
I think Stearns did a great job. Yeah.
Oh my God, he pulled that Hemsley dude right out of the hat, and you didn't hear a word.
Yeah, no.
You heard nothing. He was stealth to get help, to get that guy from St. Louis. I mean, when I saw the two guys that he got.
Yeah, you got Rodgers and Hemsley. Yeah, I mean, listen, that revamps the entire back end of the bullpen. He did a great job.
Oh my. Mets fans could be happy. Now, the question for that, now, I'm wondering if he could pry that the Robert or Robert, whatever, however you pronounce his last name, yeah, Robert,
Luis,
Robert.
Yeah, Luis Robert.
From the White Sox. I'll tell you, man, it would be Christmas in August. It would be Christmas in July, literally.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with you, Steve. I think they could use that outfielder, but I don't even know if they need it. I would like it, and especially if you're going to go be aggressive, no doubt about it. And so go get them. But these two moves are really aggressive moves, and the bullpen is, you know, one of the best, if not the best, in baseball. We'll see. Right now, it sounds like, amazingly enough, that the Padres, who have the best bullpen in baseball already this year, are in serious talks to acquire Miller from the A's. If they do that, then they go back on top as the best bullpen in baseball. But right now, you could argue that back three for the Mets are as good as any in the game. So, yeah, go get the outfielder. Go get Luis Roberts. Go get a different outfielder, whatever the case may be. Go add to the – but again, to me, the offense is based on the top of the order. And right now, whether it's, Soto down with a little bit of a, bruised foot, hopefully he'll be back, today or tomorrow. But it's Lindor and Alonso who are hitting under 200. Alonso's hitting under 200 for 50 games. There's no trade that fixes that. They've got to be better. Tim in Rockland, what's up, Tim?
Hey, Chris.
Hey, what's up?
Just wondering how available Mason Miller is and what they'd have to give up for him.
Yeah, I don't know what they'd have to give up for him. A ton. I mean, he is one of the more he's one of the it starts without question. Like, I would say Dominguez and Rice, or Spencer Jones and Rice.
Okay, something big.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it's going to take. There's no doubt Dominguez and or Spencer Jones are going if they want Miller. There's no doubt about it. One of those two guys are definitely going, like Dominguez and Schlittler.
Cashies do something big, though.
I don't disagree. I want to impact the bullpen. I want to impact the bullpen in a major way. I don't want to just get... And then plus, here's the other thing. Like, the Yankees, they don't have a closer moving forward. Like, you get Mason Miller, it brings value to the organization because now he's your closer for the next, like, 3 years. Like,
yeah,
and you don't have to, you're not going to re-sign. Yeah, absolutely. And you're not going to re-sign Devin Williams. It's going to save you money at the closer position. And you've got it locked up for a couple years. You can go spend that money elsewhere. And, I think I would do it. I would do it. Especially, and again, I would, for me, and I like the kid. I do. It's tough. It's one of I would do either Spencer Jones or Dominguez, and I probably lean towards Dominguez. I don't know. It's tough, but because I know this team right now already has, like, as long as they're confident Judge is going to be okay and gonna be able to play right field, you've got Grisham, Bellinger, and Judge in the outfield. I can trade Dominguez. He's expendable. Dominguez and Schlittler for Mason Miller, I would do it. I would do it. It's a heavy price to pay, but I would do it. for a closer of his ilk, who can, you know, be their closer for the next, was it? It's got to be at least 3 years. Let me see how many. Years he has on his deal. I mean, he's only pitched a couple of years. I think this is his third year. Let's see. Oh, of course. Mason Miller, yes. He's not a free agent until 2030. So you would have Mason Miller under reasonable numbers. This was his next year is his first year of arbitration. So you've got him for 1, 2, 3, 4 years of control. Do you know what it's going to take to get that caliber of pitcher throwing 103 miles an hour for 4 years of control? It's Dominguez, Schlittler, and maybe plus. But I would do it. I would do it. Stuart in Brooklyn. What's up, Stu?
They have to get people to be in the bullpen.
Of course.
To get rid of Dominguez. I would get rid of Dominguez before I get rid of Jones. I mean, we know that Jones has a lot of power. He can play center field, right? He plays center?
Yeah, Spencer Jones plays center, yep.
Yeah, so, what's the word on Judge?
What's the word on Judge?
Is he going to be
excellent.
Okay? Or is he,
You know as much as I do. There hasn't been anything new on Judge. He's already started swinging a bat. They expect him to be able to come back. The expectation is, as of right now, that at the end of the 10 days, they kind of expect him to be able to come back and be a DH. And then we just don't know how long before they feel comfortable letting him throw and letting him play in the outfield. So that could be a week. It could be 2 weeks. It could be a month. I have no idea, but he's going to DH for a while, I would think.
So what are we going to do with Stanton for the...
He's going to be one hell of an expensive right-handed bat off the bench.
A real expensive bat. But, Chris, yeah. They have... Luis Hill is going to pitch on Sunday, correct?
Yes.
And they need a starting... They need another arm in the rotation. They need an arm in the bullpen. And what's that guy's name? You said you give it Dominguez or Jones?
Mason Miller.
Mason Miller. Definitely.
Yeah.
That guy throws smoke.
He throws smoke. They got him controlled for 4 years. That's the Yankee closer on the cheap for the next 4 years. I think he's absolutely worth it.
Do you think they'll keep Weaver?
I think they would, depending on what the contract is for Weaver, I think they would be willing to pay Weaver and keep Weaver, yes. And I'm sure Weaver would want to stay. The Yankees are the ones who kind of resurrected his career. He got injured and the numbers aren't. Devin Williams would be gone if they make that trade. Devin Williams has a chance to come back. If they make a significant move like that, yeah. If they trade Mason Miller, then absolutely 100% Devin Williams will not
be here.
He won't be here. Nope.
And if they don't make that move, Williams would be here.
Maybe. I don't know. Not 100%. Maybe. Maybe. I probably still think he's gone. I just don't think it's been a good fit. But he's been pitching much better. And we'll see how he pitches. He blew the save last night. Again, it's only his second blown save. That is misleading. He has not been overly that good. He still makes me nervous whenever he comes in. He walked into the game last night. I was nervous before he threw a pitch. That is fair. It's only his second blown save. And the only reason why it's only two is because he happened to blow 4-run leads instead of just 3 or less. Otherwise, he would have more blown saves. And he wasn't the closer for the entire time. Weaver took over the closer role before he got hurt. So there's a reason why he's only got 2 blown saves, despite not really being instilling us with much confidence. But it is still only a second blown save, and he's been throwing the ball much, much better, and his changeup is getting the swing and misses that it's gotten previously in his career, and that's what you're looking for. Last night, not a good night. But whenever you can blow a save and still win the game, you kind of just chalk that up and take it as a positive. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. Continue to take your calls on this trade deadline Thursday morning. The Mets, 2 enormous bullpen moves. They bring in the submariner right-hander Tyler Rogers. for a hefty package. Some might even, I'm in that camp, some would even call it an overpay. But I love that it's an overpay. I love the aggressiveness from this general manager to go out there and bolster this team's bullpen. And then obviously Ryan Helsley as well, the closer of the St. Louis Cardinals, much more of a fair trade in that one. Jesus Baez is a top five prospect for the Mets, top six prospect for the Mets. So he's one of the bigger prospects that went, but still a better package for that one, but it doesn't matter. Two real bullpen, impactful arms, back end of the pen, really going to help the Mets down the stretch of the season into the playoffs. And now we wait for Brian Cashman to do something at the trade, for the pitching, which I will be shocked. Let me just say this as we go to the break. I will be shocked, shocked, if he does not get, two bullpen arms. I'll be shocked. The question is, at what level? How good are the bullpen arms? Are they the Mark Leiters of the world that he got last year? Or does he step up and really, like, he's going to get some bullpen arms. You can guarantee that. At what level? And what is he willing to give up? 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. Quick break update. We'll come back, continue to take your calls as we take it to the morning show, 6 a.m. right here on The Fan.